This episode was created on unceded Coast Salish territories of the Lekwungen and Wissanic people. CFUV has been around for over 30 years. In that time, we have worked with many radio hosts, all with their own unique experiences and stories. I'm setting out to find how CFUV has affected its community and to get an inside story on CFUV's DJs. I'm Max Monday, and this is Behind the Mic. We're talking today with Adam from The Warehouse, who just recently completed his 100th show.
That's right, 100th episode. Ooh. This is the milestone. That's right, the 100th show. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Congratulations.
Thank
on
you.
That.
Yeah, it's great.
Adam has been DJing for around 20 years. He was a pioneer for the promotion of house music in Victoria in its early years.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was becoming a little bit more mainstream, I guess you could say, because there was a lot of raves happening. So it was becoming more, you know, in the front, and everyone could, you know, experience it if they wanted to. It wasn't so underground anymore like it was in the early 90s or late 80s, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. How did you become acquainted with house music?
I think just listening to old, it was like techno back in the day. I don't know, Chris Shepherd's, those old CDs and tapes and stuff like in the early 90s and stuff. Was some of that in the early 90s that I listened to. And then by like 95, the music just really, it was just, I remember actually it was through a Toronto radio station, and it was a university station as well. CIUT, I think it was called. And that's where I like my show now on Friday nights, somebody else had a show just like mine Friday nights, and it would play drum and bass and like house and stuff. And so that's also where I would listen to is on the radio at first before I started going to raves myself and then actually started getting into the culture more. Mm-hmm. And the music. Yeah.
Who was the first house DJ that you listened to?
DJ Dan. Yeah, it was crazy. The first big party I went to was in Toronto, March 16th, and it was 96, and it was the first big rave I went to, and he was one of the headliners, and his music was just so amazing, so it really grabbed me, and I just gravitated to him and his music, and I just had this weird feeling about him and his name, and it was just weird. I've always listened to his tunes. And
this DJ Dan track, Disco Request, is from the album Future Retro.
We've become friends since then, so I'm actually a good friend of his. I've known him since about 2001, I think it was when I met him. Yeah, it was 5 years after I saw him first in Toronto to the date he was playing in Victoria, and I snuck in backstage after the show here at Sugar, and I talked to him, and then we just hit it off and became friends. And I've been to his place in LA and spent a week with him down there and stuff, and just before Christmas a few years ago, and like I hang out with him a lot. So I'm going to the Tall Tree Music Fest with him coming up in a couple weeks as a guest. So
before Adam started mixing on turntables, he was playing guitar in a band called Surf Camp Rejects. As time moved forward, he became more interested in the art of spinning house music on vinyl for his fans.
I had always loved music. Ever since I was a little kid, I play piano and stuff like that, and just, you know, was always into music. So learning guitar was like a normal thing to me when I got into that when I was about 14 or 15. But the electronic side just really appealed to me because you were the only person up there controlling the crowd and the music, and it was all up to you, nobody else. You were just a single person in charge. To me, that seemed like a real interesting way to tell a story with music, like you really do if you're a really good DJ and you get up there and you know what material you have with you, and you're gonna put it in an arrangement that night that's going to make a story to everybody out there. Mm-hmm. And it's going to speak to people that way and through dancing and the music and the energy. So to me, that's what drew me to it, is just being able to connect with people that way through music and not just by playing a guitar. At that point, there was less people DJing. It was still coming up in the subculture, right, as a DJ and stuff. So to me, as an entertainer, it was really appealing that way. I was kind of like, I loved being in a band, but you were dependent on three or four other people to make the music that you wanted to. And sometimes you didn't agree to make the same music, or, you know, during a live performance, the drummer misses a beat, screws up, then everybody sounds like shit, not just you, right?
Yeah,
so if
totally.
You make a mistake as a DJ, it's in your hands. You made the mistake. You're the only one to blame, kind of deal. So.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your first turntable.
Oh man, it was in 96. It was 20 years ago, just before the end of school, I guess, summer. I graduated that summer, so I was the last year of high school for me. So I was in a band at the time, actually, playing rhythm guitar in a band called Surf Camp Rejects. And I had already gone to a bunch of raves that year, and I was just into the music so bad. Actually, probably around March or April, while school was still on, bought a pair of Belt Drive Techniques turntables. Like, they were Techniques, but they were Belt Drive, and they were just, you know, really poor quality compared to real turntables. So, but gave me something to learn on and practice on. And of course, with a realistic Radio Shack mixer, I think the whole thing cost me like $100 or something. Everything together, it was a joke, but it got me something. And that's how I learned originally, is on those tables. So they did have pitch adjust, it had to, so you could manipulate the speed of the record, but you had to get really good with manipulating it with your hand, because the belts were so inconsistent and they would be sloppy or speed up too quick or slow down too quick. So you had to get better. It was almost better to learn on tables like that and then move on to Technique 1200s, like the industry standards, because then when I got my Tech 12s, I was like, holy crap, I'm really good. You know, because until now I've been playing on these crappy belt drives and they were just so hard to use, but I was really good at using them. So, you know, I learned quick about beat matching and how to start a mix and do a mix. So,
Adam brought his talents as a DJ to the airwaves by mixing tracks live on his show, The Warehouse.
Yeah, I've been doing that for probably like a year. I think just getting comfortable with my show for the first 5 or 6 months allowed me to start thinking, how can I make it more interactive on my end? Because just sitting there and playing track after track on a CD player or off the computer, it just wasn't that fun for me. I'd love still doing it, but I want to be hands-on. I'm a hands-on DJ. I still play vinyl. So
oh, cool.
Like when here in the studio, when I start my set about 10:30 and on, usually it's all usually vinyl for the next hour and a half that I'm mixing live in the studio. So I just kind of slowly progressed to that, I guess, once I started doing my show and got comfortable with my show and started going, you know what, I'm just going to do this and experiment. And it just went off. And then after that, I just said, you know what, this is the way to do it. This is how I want to do it. So.
How yeah. do you make a connection with your fans over the airwaves? Like, you're sitting in this room,
mm-hmm.
and you're alone.
Yeah, that's
like,
right. There's nobody else in there.
There's
that's
one
right.
person, yeah. and but there's many, many people listening. How do yeah. you get that part of you that's in the station out to the radio, like out to the people that are mm-hmm. listening, out to their speakers?
Just through my energy,
yeah.
right? So, yeah, and the music. I always had a very selective hearing and stuff when it came to the tracks I bought on vinyl. So that's why, like, I would say, you know, honestly, 95% of the tracks I have at home are all killer tracks. Like, I could play any of them at any time, and the majority of my fans would like it. So, I mean, for that, I think that my music is what really connects with people to begin with. But I think I just have good delivery with the music, with my speaking over the music. I try to time it really well too. So when I'm speaking, there's like a breakdown in the track, and then when the track boom kicks back in, then I stop speaking, so it's focused back on the music.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Yeah. Really trying to have the focus on the music. I think that's where what speaks to people. Hey.
the difference between playing in a basement radio mm-hmm. station versus playing in the club?
Well, the one that there's no audience feedback. Yeah. So that's, you know, it's totally different. At first, when I first started doing the show, it felt really different because you are down here by yourself in the studio, in the basement. There's nobody else here. Every other lights are off. It's kind of creepy sometimes too, you know, but so it feels kind of like there isn't anybody listening. But then you do get the odd phone call when someone hears a wicked track they haven't heard. And they're like, this happened a couple weeks ago. I played this track, Orbital, by Orbital called Halcyon. And this fella phoned up and he goes, man, I can't believe you're playing this track right now. I haven't heard this track in over 20 years, you know, and he just absolutely freaked out. And it was like, that's like payment right there of why you come in every Friday and do it, right? It's those people who hear those tracks and they're just like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I just heard this on the radio. So that way the radio, you know, is a cool way to connect with people, but you don't get that satisfaction because it's not immediate and not everyone's going to pick up the phone and call. So very few people probably actually pick up the phone and call. Even though they want to, they're probably just like, no, I don't want to. And they just get scared or something. I don't know. So they don't phone in, even if they want to, because they just heard a killer track. But so, I mean, that would be a difference, is there's no feedback from your audience if you're playing in the studio here by yourself than if you're in the club.
How does CFUV provide you with a more widespread audience?
I think just that way, anybody can listen. You know, there is no age limit to turn the radio on and turn on good tunes. So therefore, anybody can listen. And this way, it's really cool because I have family back in Europe, you know, cousins in like Sweden and stuff, and my cousins in Hungary. So they get to listen online. And it's really neat because it allows me to share my music and my energy and stuff like that with them without me having to put, because it's a weekly show, so every week it's different. So it's really neat. I don't have to, it's like making a special mix every week and putting it online, right? But totally. It's allowed to be done through CFUV weekly.
I guess electronic music is ever changing, much like any other music. And right now, like, you know, house music has been around for quite a long time. How does CFUV help you keep house music alive?
Yeah, that's awesome. I think just because it allows me to have my show every week and these guys trust me to put on a good quality programming. Mm-hmm. And I have hundreds and hundreds of good house records at home that I go through on a weekly basis to pick out that week's show, right? And drum and bass and jungle as well, on top of all the house and stuff I have. So yeah, so some nights when I'm playing here, I'll have like just the other night with the 100th show, there was the Tone Loc and the Nirvana remix. It's like a mashup. It's a total white label bootleg illegal copy that I don't even, I think my buddy from New York State sent it to me. He was really into break beats as well. So there was a label called R2M and him and I would trade a lot of records through that label. But he would send me sometimes these amazing tracks and they were just one-offs. And I'm sure there was like 500 printed or 100 or who knows. You don't know because these guys just made these two, this music, and nobody had permission to use Nirvana's Nevermind and Tone Loc's song. So they just jam it together and there it is. So, I mean, there's a good example of some. If someone turns the radio on and listens to that, they're just going to be blown away and go, holy crap, that is amazing. And then a couple songs later, I'm just going to play some really jazzy or really funky house tune and they're still listening because they're like, man, this is kind of cool, you know, and I can get into this. Like artists like Mike Dixon, when I play some of his tracks, it's like a swing house, you know. Yeah. It's really, really amazing. So much energy. Like, that's when if I was at home listening, I'd be just dancing, you know, dancing away in your living room, just giving her. You can just imagine people doing that, hopefully. Totally. So I always tell people, you know, get in your dancing socks, push your coffee table aside, and just get on there and dance.
That's super cool.
You're at home, you know? No one's going to pay attention.
Yeah, totally.
Good... Just your neighbors. What the hell is Jimmy doing up there?
Adam makes a point of using CFUV to make house music accessible to everyone. He gives his all into every set he does on the warehouse, and his energy and enthusiasm are as infectious as the beats he plays. This last track is one from his 100th episode. This episode of Behind the Mic included an interview with Adam, host of The Warehouse, which airs on Fridays from 10 to midnight. For more episodes of Behind the Mic, visit soundcloud.com/CFUV. I know a funky place that we can dance all night.